Christy and Doc approached their targets with caution. Doc looked up at the rapidly lightening sky and wanted to say that they should hurry, but he kept a hold on his tongue, knowing that he should only speak when absolutely necessary. Ethan and his two hunters were clustered together, the Pleasantville Baron in the middle, just where they didn't want him. Christy sidled up to Doc and whispered in his ear,
"I'll get Ethan away from those two. You use your blaster and just take them out as soon as Ethan is clear."
"Whatever you say, dear lady."
Doc watched Christy disappear into the shadows and checked the load on his Lamar. The shot and ball chambers were both loaded, ready for use. It was true that the antique blaster could, if the two riders were close enough, take them out with just the shot load. But how was Christy going to lure Ethan away? He smiled to himself. He would just have to trust her ingenuity. Christy would have been touched if she had known of Doc's faith, for as she stealthily obtained a new position in the woods, away from Doc, her mind was racing, trying to come up with some way in which she could separate Ethan from the others. She drew and checked her Smith & Wesson blaster and racked her brain for some plan. As she got into position, the first of the shots from the far side of the copse could be heard. Ethan was immediately alert, and she heard him tell the two hunters to stay, but to be calm and triple red, as he reined his horse and moved at a trot toward the north, where he had left Riley and two riders. Ethan pulled his blaster and turned to speak. Doc cut off his words before they had a chance to be spoken. With the two hunters isolated from the Pleasantville Baron, Doc took his opportunity. Ethan was frozen with shock. His world seemed to be crumbling around him. Christy was about to make it crumble a little further. She took aim and squeezed off a .38 caliber slug that hit the Baron high on the upper arm, making him drop the Glock. The shock was enough to make him tumble from his horse. To secure the advantage, Christy had to leave cover. She ignored the downed riders to her right, trusting Doc to mop them up. Her concern now was that Ethan, hidden by his startled mount, would be able to regain his blaster before she could put him any further out of action. She ran toward the horse, keeping her blaster at waist level to squeeze off a low-angle shot if necessary. To one side, Doc also emerged from the woods. He loped toward the fallen hunters, Lamar in one hand, Toledo's steel blade unsheathed and in his other hand. The two hunters were groaning softly, near death. Doc put them out of their misery. Meanwhile, Christy approached Ethan, who was now visible where the horse had bolted, exposing him. He had struggled up into a sitting position and was trying to reach for his blaster, despite the bleeding wound in his shoulder. Keep him alive, Christy thought, as she brought up one silver-tipped cowboy boot to connect with his jaw. As the unconscious Baron lay on the ground, Christy set to staunch the blood flow from his wound. She was still doing that when Doc indicated that he could see Ryan and Jack approaching with three horses, which they had rounded up on their way. Doc had also managed to secure Ethan's startled mount and was calming it. The sun was beginning to blaze down on them as they loaded the semi-conscious Baron onto one of the horses, taking a mount each for themselves.
"Looks like we've got our currency. Now let's see if we can bargain with the bastard."
Looking up at the sun, Doc estimated that it would be around mid-morning when they came in view of Pleasantville's walls. A shout went up from the walls as the companions came into view, with Ethan draped over a horse in front of Ryan, lying across the horse's neck. Ryan whispered, fatigue and lack of water now beginning to affect him, as it was the others.
"Triple red, people. They probably won't like this."
The four companions pulled their blasters and were ready as the walls loomed larger. But the strangest thing was that up on the SMG emplacements, the people manning them were making no effort to take aim on the approaching riders.
"By the three Kennedys, this is most strange. What can be occurring?"
"Reckon we're gonna have to keep going and find out when we get there, Doc."
Inside Pleasantville, word spread like wildfire. The hunt was returning, and it consisted of the four who had been the prey, with no sign of those who had paid or the sec men. But Ethan was there, disabled and as their prisoner. The whisper spurred on the rebels who were clustered around the armory and the sec camp. Under the direction of Stark and Eddie, in their respective positions, the attacks were mounted. From their position on the far wall, JB and Mildred could see the battle commence. There were some sec men who were, like Stark and Eddie, sympathetic to the sudden swell of rebellion. Stark and Eddie had known who the sympathetic people were and had sought their help. Pinned in and with warning, the sec in the armory and the sec camp had little chance of fighting back, despite their superior weaponry. The battle was swift and bloody, and seen from a distance, seemed to be so simple. At each site, a pincer movement was put into operation, with a select few mounting a frontal attack, others taking the rear of each encampment, all covered by their lesser-equipped compatriots who had been carefully placed in cover. It was noticeable from this distance that there was little resistance to the rebellion. All the fighting was concentrated on the two encampments, and it was swift and bloody. The forces within each were almost overwhelmed before they had a chance to fight back. The onslaught was swift and well executed, with the rebels firing at will to take out any targets that presented themselves and directing fire toward the weapon stores, both to detonate and to prevent the sect within from getting fresh supplies. Added to this was some dissent within the camps. At first, they were united in panic against the sudden attack, but that changed as they realized that it was their own people who were attacking. Some within weren't willing to fight, and when their fellow sect men refused to lay down arms, they turned upon one another. JB and Mildred watched it all. It felt strange to be observing a firefight of such intensity, the kind of firefight they would normally be in the thick of, as though it were some kind of game. For a second, it occurred to both Mildred and JB that this was what it had to be like for those who had paid to see their friends hunt one another.
Dark night. It's a mess down there.
John, let's get down there and see what we can do. I reckon we're not going to be targets now.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of shit to sweep clean.
The four companions on horseback were still a little suspicious as they rode into the ville through a gate that was open for them. They could hear a firefight in the distance, but here the atmosphere was strangely, eerily calm as they were welcomed by a small group of people carrying blasters at ease. One of the men who had been on the tower had seen them approach.
You've got the Baron, but what about the others?
Bought the farm, all of them. And if you try anything, the same will happen to him.
He prodded the semi-conscious Baron, who moaned softly. An old woman stepped forward and spat at the prone Ethan.
You could do anything to him and no one would give a shit. He's told us what to do for too long. It's all changed now, and it's thanks to you people.
Thanks to us?
Sure. You wouldn't know, would you? How could you? Your man and woman are with us. Stark and Michaela brought them back from the ruined city, and they plotted to set us free.
JB and Mildred are alive?
Yeah. Don't know where they are right now, but they're somewhere in the ville and helped plan the revolution.
Where are Stark and Michaela?
Don't know that either. It's chaos, but at least we're free.
Ryan indicated to the companions to ride on.
Where are we headed, lover?
To the action. One way or another, I figure that's where we'll find JB and Mildred.
The sect compound was a mess. The air was filled with the smell of cordite and blood, and as JB and Mildred arrived, Stark and Michaela were standing in the middle of the devastation, speaking to the clustered fighters. There was an air of muted jubilation, as exhaustion and the sudden realization of what had actually happened began to hit the people of Pleasantville.
Spread the word! There's a new way of doing things! We'll have a meeting when this is cleared, and everyone will get a chance to have a say on how the ville is run. We decide things by the majority from now on!
No more oppressing others and using people! Fuck that! We're all sick of it, right? For the next few days, until we get ourselves straight, me and Eddie will run the sect. And by that I mean that we'll make sure cleanups are organized and patrols are mounted on the walls. Then we'll see how it goes from there. Michaela will return to the hospital, but she'll head up meetings. She's the smartest person I've ever met, and she'll see to us all right. This thing of everyone having a say is her idea, and it sounds good to me.
He was about to speak again when he caught sight of the four riders as they were about to enter the compound.
Look! They're alive!
Without another word, he left Michaela's side and fought his way through the crowd to where the riders were being cheerfully mobbed. He reached Jack, and the albino smiled and took the hand proffered by the bald man, which engulfed his own.
I knew you were the kind to make it back, and your friends are here too!
Gaia, it's true! Ryan, Doc, look!
Coming toward them, through the crowd, were JB and Mildred, astonishment written large on their faces, echoed by that of the four riders.
How? I could ask you the same.
Michaela stepped forward to where the six companions and Stark were now clustered.
No time for talking now. You know as well as I do, Mildred, that what you all need, what we all need, is to rest. This has been a momentous day. Tomorrow we decide what to do with this cold heart.
The next day saw the populace clustered around the Sec compound, while the six companions, plus Michaela, Stark, and Eddie, stood within. With them, hands bound in front of him, stood Ethan. The companions had caught up on each other's stories and were now ready to move on, but had agreed to stay for a while to see what the Vill had in mind for their deposed Baron. Michaela spoke to Ethan, although her words were loud and were directed at the crowds.
For too long you've ruled us by the hunt. It made our Vill wealthy, but it became more than that. Its sadism and perversion infested your soul, and by extension the soul of our Vill. We became obsessed by Jack and Chilling, even though we began with the idea to move beyond that. Well, I guess we will now. We don't want you or what you stand for and what you made of some of us. We had to chill people we knew to get back to the right way of things. You're as responsible for those buying the farm as we are. So you've got one chance. From here, I turn you loose. You have to run through the streets to the Vill walls. If you get out alive, you're free to go. But you'll be hunted every step of the way.
You might as well chill me now, and you know it. That makes you no better than me.
True. But we are what you made us.
Very well. Let's get this bullshit over with.
Ethan held out his hands to her. Stark stepped forward, a blaster in his hand. He smiled without humor.
Oh, no. I get to untie your bonds. You're not going to go for her, or you won't even get one step.
I should have killed you a long time ago.
Hands cut free, the Baron took one last lingering look around at the people who had once followed him, then cast a venomous glance at Michaela before heading for the compound's gates. He ran as though he meant it, but he had to have known that he was doomed, condemned to a drawn-out execution that was a hideous parody of his own trade. Ethan turned left at the gates, running through the streets and pursued by a baying mob that pelted him with stones. Michaela and Stark had forbidden the use of blasters, but they had said nothing about blades. The streets were also lined by crowds with knives, who slashed at him as he ran past. The stones and rocks bruised and cut his back and shoulders, skimmed low and bit sharply at his knees and calves. His head, kept low, was also hit, and he staggered as dizziness began to overwhelm him. The slashing from the sides ripped at his clothes and flesh, small cuts stinging, blood loss minimal from each, but enough to add to his lightheadedness. He had no idea where he was going, stumbling and falling, the ground hard and unwelcoming as it came up to meet him, his forehead crashing against concrete and tarmac, making his head ring and spin. Ethan rolled onto his back, gasping for breath, eyes unable to focus, barely able now to hear the baying crowds that loomed over him, the hail of rocks and stones no longer hurting, as a comfortable, numbing blankness began to wash over him. The world closed in, darkness turning it into a tunnel that closed to a pinpoint, and then nothing.